Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
On Twitter, at Rich Cioli. We're streaming live on YouTube right now. Join the chat. Very, very happy to welcome to the program Congressman Mike Kelly, represents the 16th District in Pennsylvania. He's also the chairman of the bipartisan task force investigating the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. Follow him on X at Mike Kelly PA. Congressman, thanks for joining us here in Philadelphia. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich. It's great to be on WPHT with you.
Well, absolutely. You know, you're doing a great job chairing this committee. I played a pretty long clip of you the other day, last week, saying it's mind-boggling to me that Crooks was on the roof and nobody bothered to take Trump off that stage. I thought that was a great moment that you said that. You nailed it. It's just absolutely infuriating.
Yeah, well, you know, we talk about everything on that, and I think, you know, referring back to that the statement that I made, it wasn't that they knew that there was a suspicious character at 10 minutes after 6. They knew about 40 minutes ahead of that. The one person they kept referring to out of all the people on the grounds that day, there's 25,000-30,000 people, the one consistent report is on the suspicious person. Oh, I see him. Oh, he's disappeared. Oh, he's behind the building. Oh, he's here. Oh, he's there. Oh, and the question, Rich, I mean, obviously for any of us, would say, okay, we're not sure that it's safe and secure for President Trump to go out there. Just hold him back until we secure the area. And that's the one thing. All the other things that went wrong that day, and believe me, if it's a checklist, is everything that could go wrong that day went wrong that day. But at the end of it all you had to do was keep President Trump off the stage until you made sure the suspicious person actually had been confronted and had been set aside. This is mind-boggling to me, but as we continue to look through here, one of the things, you know, we tried to make sure last week, we had local law enforcement, because early on, all the fingers were pointing about, well, local law enforcement didn't do their job. Local law enforcement didn't uphold what they were supposed to do. One thing we found out is that local law enforcement did exactly what they were supposed to do that day. Then the question then comes back, once the keys were handed over to Secret Service, they're responsible for securing the site, making the site ready, and then coordinating everything, including the ability to communicate, which that did not happen.
And that's also amazing how the communication breakdowns between the agents who were on the ground and the agents who were in Trump's detail. And the snipers on the roof and how they're all not talking to each other in these fancy wrist walkie-talkie thingies that they have. I mean, I don't understand that. I don't understand how that's possible.
Well, I don't understand it either. But what I don't really understand is certainly before 11 minutes after 6, they realized they couldn't communicate with each other. Somebody should have said, hey, wait a minute, this isn't working. We need to find out where we're failing to communicate. That's why you do things ahead of time. You don't wait until the minute something bad happens to say, we should have been ready for this. You get ready for it ahead of time. There's always a checklist with everything you do in life. And it's if you're prepared for something, then that's probably the best way to run into any situation, knowing that you've covered every single thing you thought you needed to cover. And in this case, there's too many empty spaces. There's too many things that weren't checked off. But this ability to communicate is one that I can't believe that we didn't know till 11 minutes after 6 on July 13th that we couldn't talk to each other. That is bizarre.
So, Congressman Kelly, now that you've had the one hearing, I mean, do you still have questions? Or what's next in all this?
Yeah, well, you know, the president is coming back this Saturday, October the 5th. And it's very rarely in life that you have a second time to make amends for what you screwed up the first time or how you missed so much the first time. The second part of what we're going to do is we wanted to make sure that local law enforcement got its day in court to explain what happened and what didn't happen. Now it comes down to Secret Service, Homeland Security, FBI, who all else was involved in that should have been there for the structure of what was going to happen on July 13th and make sure that everybody knew what position they were supposed to be in. The other thing, which as you know, that comes up is the perimeter. Why wasn't that perimeter extended way beyond the AGH building? Why wasn't the water tower checked out? Why didn't we have drones? And I find out, well, we did have a drone, but it didn't work. And I said, so are you telling me again, not only did your phones not work, but your drone didn't work, but you didn't know that before the event was taking place? There's just too many things here that were handled too casually. And as we continue to look through this, we look at the structure of Secret Service that day, Homeland Security that day, anybody else in law enforcement, especially from the federal end, where were they and what were they not prepared for that day, and why weren't they prepared for it that day? It's the touch gloves moment. It's that pregame get-together. It's breaking down films that people look at. This is the way we are successful with things. We're not successful when we're haphazard or we're too casual with what it is we need to do.
No, and you know what, Mr. Chairman, my 10-year-old son knows how to operate a drone. The fact that this guy is calling a 1-800 number for help with how to work a drone at a presidential event, I mean, that's infuriating. The fact that locals warned the Secret Service about that AGR building and said this should be secured, and this still bothers me is, you know, I mean, we all love that iconic moment of Trump putting his hand in the air, his fist in the air, and saying fight, fight, fight. But my God, was he exposed for several seconds. And that also is something that really bothers me. I mean, he should have been off that stage, not getting his shoes, not having the chance to put his fist up in the air because they needed to get him off that stage. His head was exposed. Thank God there was not a second shooter, because that second shooter may have got a shot off on him.
Yeah, you know, so what you're bringing up right now is that cascade of everything that day, for whatever reason, it was too casual. We weren't prepared for it. And you keep looking back at it and say, how could we not have been? Some of these things are fundamental. They're the basics of what it is that you think would have been in place. All I know is Eli Crane, one of the people that I serve with in Congress, and he's a former special ops guy and a sniper. The one thing he said to us last week when we had our get together, and we had both he and Corey Mills in, and Eli made this statement. He said, "Chairman, if the two people who attempted to take the president's life had been pros, these were rookies that didn't know what they were doing. They were haphazard. They didn't have their act together. I guarantee you there are people in the world right now who are waiting for that opportunity. And had they been there that day, the president would not be a contender right now, would not be our candidate. He would be dead." So two rookies making rookie mistakes, very unprepared area, not ready for everything. But you look at it, if it was that casual, And on that day, the president truly walked away from something that was very dangerous, and the same thing down in Florida. What if it had been the professional people that are out there that do this, and they're very good at it? What if they had been there that day, and not a 20-year-old who wasn't really sure what he was doing? But more importantly, what about a group that was there that should have never allowed Trump to come out of the tent onto the stage when they knew there was a suspicious person? It's the only person they identified of all the thousands of people on that lawn that day. That's the only consistent recognition was there's a suspicious person. We've lost sight of him. Oh, there he is. Oh, wait, we lost sight of him. Oh, he's on the roof. That is the part I don't think at the end of the day we're going to look at that and say, none of that makes sense, and I can't get that to add up no matter what math I use.
No, I can't. And listen, and thank you for your passion on this, Chairman Kelly. Thank you, because I feel the same way, and it's frustrating. And I can hear the frustration in your voice. And you're doing a great job with this committee. I mean, this is bipartisan. I got to say, it's rare to see bipartisanship in action. But the Democrats and the Republicans on that committee are doing a great job. And it's one of those rare moments where you see them actually all coming together on this, and you can tell everybody is genuinely, really, just completely frustrated and just cannot believe this occurred in the year 2024. But, you know, just to hear the frustration you just expressed on this show right now, Congressman Mike Kelly, is exactly what everybody else is feeling. It's like, how the hell can this happen? And then after that, to have a guy spend 12 hours in the bushes outside the golf course, and then, you know, nobody checks the perimeter. I mean, come on. Like, what the hell?
Well, As I said earlier, and as Eli Crane was so clear when he spoke to me about it, he said, "Mike, so far, the president's been very fortunate. These guys are rookies that don't know what they're doing. When we get a professional sniper, it won't be he dodged another bullet. It'll be at the end of the days for him." I got to tell you, I think when you talk about the task force, we don't identify as Republicans or Democrats. We identify as American legislators. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. This is an American issue. When we start looking like a third world country, then things are really bad. We cannot ever assume that we are going to be safe again. We also always make sure that we go to the nth degree that we can to protect anybody who is in that position. We just can't let our guard down. The rest of the world is watching. And as I watch this go on and where we're at right now with our task force, we are so riveted on the fact that at the end of the day, we want to make sure that the American people have the faith, the trust, and the confidence that they must have in this government that we've been cherished, and 1.5 million men and women in uniform have died to protect and pass it on to the future. That is the charge we have. It's not a Republican charge. It's not a Democrat charge. It's an American charge, and we must fulfill that promise to the American people.
And can we hold people accountable, Congressman? Can we hold people accountable for these failures?
You know what? I don't know how you don't hold people accountable, right? Everything in life, if you're tasked to do something, at the end of that, you must be held accountable. You're congratulated doing a good job. If you don't do a good job, then you're held accountable for not doing a good job. We will look deeper and deeper into this. I know part of the issue was early on, we don't have enough people in Secret Service anymore. That's a fact. It's just math. The other thing is, how is it that we're able to bring more people in, get more people up to the duty that has to be done, and then be able at any given day, at any given time, know that we're going to be protected, and we're going to be protected by the special shield of the Secret Service and all those people that are in that. They're very dedicated people. That day is the worst day the Secret Service has ever had, and I think when you talk to Director Rowe, he's the first one that will say that this is something that will forever be a stain on us. But moving from this day forward, as far as holding people accountable, we'll find out what went wrong. We'll find out who was responsible for it going wrong, and we will never, to the best of our ability, ever let it happen again.
Well, you're doing a great job. Thank you. I'm so glad you're the chairman of this task force. I really am. I hope you come back and talk to us again. We look forward to the next hearings. Follow the congressman on X at Mike Kelly, PA. Congressman Mike Kelly, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Keep up the passion on this. We really need it. We're counting on you, and you're delivering for us. So thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks. Thanks very much.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour. Rich Zeoli Show, brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, a premier full-service resort and conference center, grandhotelcapemay.com.
I tell you, you can just hear it. You know, you can hear the frustration. I mean, that is a lot of sincerity in that man's voice. Holy cow. All right. And I hear a man dedicated to getting the answers and getting the truth. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. All right. It's our happy hour. And you look at the world, and there's not a lot to be happy about. It's freaking chaos out there, and we might have a toilet paper shortage soon. But we'll be happy in Cape May on October 11th at the Grand Hotel for our next live show, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, Friday, October 11th, 3 to 7 p.m., live show, free show. Come as long as you like. You come for 5 minutes, come for the whole show, whatever you like, and please join us for that in Cape May. It's a beautiful time of year to be there. October is great, and these live shows are a blast. Just ask anybody who's been to one, and we have several Zeoli Army members who are now, like, they've been to 5, 6 shows. It's like following the dead, but without all the drugs. It's great. I mean, unless you count, obviously, alcohol as a drug, but not, I mean, drugs, not like LSD, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get my point. And the bar will be open, and we'll have a lot of fun. So join us for that October 11th. It'll be great. And hopefully, and we met some of our YouTube friends there. Kimmy was there last time. We met some of our YouTube buddies, so hopefully you'll be there. I know Chris Eppolito, he was there last time. I shouldn't name names because I'll leave people out, but that's all right. You get the point. All right. And you know what, Matt DeSantis? I was thinking about this, too. You, one more reason why everybody hates Harvard, and I know you put this in the show sheet for the reason, but it's a story entitled, Sorry, Harvard, but more people are choosing schools in the South. I think it's that. I also think it's, too, about the fact that they don't want to be accused of being an elitist. You know what you're stocking up on right now? Coca-Cola and brioche buns. That's what you're stocking up on before the longshoreman strike really affects us. Am I right?
If I don't have Coca-Cola, I'll just die of dehydration. I have to have it. I need my daily fix. It's a necessity.
And Doritos, too, right?
I'm not a big Dorito fan. I'm not Kamala Harris, but
I enjoy Dorito occasionally. I mean, that clip was bad of her with the Doritos. She's so phony. I don't think she's ever really eaten Doritos in her life. Do you?
No, and she pronounces Doritos like kind of strangely. Yeah. Hold on, let me pull up the clip because none of it sounds natural to me.
There's everything's fake about her, even her choice in snack food. Like, she can't even be authentic about her choice in snack food. It's like they poll tested and focus grouped what chip she should pick out at a Pennsylvania convenience store, and it came back with Doritos. And then it's but she says it like my son says it, and he's mocking the name of it. He says Doritos, and he makes jokes about it, but this fraud doesn't, I don't think she knows how to say it. Unbelievable. All right, take a listen to this.
One of my guilty pleasures, especially when I'm on the road, are my Doritos.
Oh, what flavor?
Nacho. Old school, original. OG. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Red bag.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Red bag.
That's exactly. Got to have a napkin nearby.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oof, that laugh. So play one more time how she says Doritos. Is she trying to do that, like to pronounce it like it's some sort of like a Spanish cuisine or something? Is that what it is? She doesn't want to offend the people of Madrid. It's freaking Doritos. It's made in America.
I've never heard anyone pronounce them this way.
No,
but yeah,
it's
here it is again.
It's one of the most American snacks there is. What does she think? She's offending somebody in Central America by not saying it that way? She's such a freaking fraud. Take it one more time.
One of my guilty pleasures, especially when I'm on the road, are my Doritos.
Doritos. So bad. So bad at this. So bad at this.
I agree with her, though. The nacho Doritos are better than the Cool Ranch. No doubt. No doubt about that. We can all agree. I think it's the one thing that unites all Americans, whether or not they're Republican or Democrat, Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. Cool Ranch, not the greatest Dorito.
I feel like Justin was going to jump in and disagree with you.
No, my thing was she had us with the nacho. Like the nacho cheese is the best Doritos flavor, but mm-hmm. she immediately tanked it by saying, "I got to have a napkin nearby." Everybody knows you lick the cheese off your fingers. You don't.
Yeah.
Who just wastes that? That's the good stuff.
Yeah, but if she's such a fraud. Yeah, she like this, like that, you know. Suck that nacho cheese off. This is the kind of highbrow conversation we have before we have on the former national security advisor to the president of the United States of America. This is what we do. Talking about sucking Doritos off your fingers, and then we transition to Dr. Coates and Israel. Only this show gets away with that. You know what I mean? Because he just goes off the friggin' rails. You know what? A couple of buddies of mine who I used to live in the old town, when they heard my conversation about breaking in and stealing coffee, you know what they said?
What's
Thank
that?
God you moved. That's what they said. Thank God you moved. So, like, I could break into a house. I can't hang a freaking picture. Could you imagine me trying to break and enter? I would have more medical wounds from that. It would be a disaster. I'd lose an arm. You know what I mean? It'd be a disaster. Nothing good comes from that. Nothing. I have no ability to do anything handy. The least of all would be pick a lock. Even breaking a window, I'd break my foot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not stealing anything. No way. I'll talk tough, though.
Didn't you damage your thumb on an inflatable raft? Yeah, smashing the window. You're definitely going to cut up your hand.
Well, in fairness to me, that inflatable raft had my 10-year-old son on it. So, you know, technically it was my 10-year-old who jammed up my thumb. I had to get an x-ray on it to make sure it wasn't broken. My doctor's like, "You're a friggin' mess." It's like, "You're a mess." I don't even know what to do with you. You know? Oh, they got a picture of Walt, you know, doing that thing where he walks out with his big belly, and he does that goofy Richard Simmons thing where he comes out and he points. And I'm telling you, he's Chris Farley. He's Matt Foley, motivational speaker. That's who he is. He's living in a van down by the Minnesota River. All right, can we do her walk-up music? Can we play that? Let's do this. Let's boom. No? All right, that's okay. Oh, there we go. We got it. Beautiful. Joining us, unplanned, but reacting to the news of the day, we're grateful. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor and the Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. She's the biggest Phillies fan you know outside of the fanatic. She's Dr. Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend. How are you?
I am well. Do you know, I know the fanatic. I've met him.
Ooh, name dropper.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So all right. If we can get through the next couple of days, we'll get to Phillies playoff baseball, and I will be a happy girl.
Have you been to the Galapagos Islands to see where he's from?
Not yet.
All right. We got a lot to chat about. And it is very cool that you know the fanatic. But it's funny because it's you know presidents and you know prime ministers and heads of state. But it's like, I know the fanatic. And I think you're of all of that, you're proudest of the fact that you know the fanatic. Am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. We were talking about John Brasier the other day. What we said to each other is we are the only two people we know who envy each other's jobs, because most times people say to me, you're so lucky you get to do this, that, and the other. I'd say, yeah, but I'm not John Brasier. And John gets the same thing. He's like, yeah, so but true. I'm not Victoria Coates.
And we're getting into Red October, my friend. I'm fired up. This is great. This is by the way, I'm wearing, I don't know if you can see on YouTube, I have got my my Phillies powder blue in honor of Pete Rose. Is it not an absolute sin that he's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
It is. I mean, Pete was a deeply flawed human being, but so are many professional athletes, and he was exceptional. I was at one of the 1980 games, World Series games, with my father. And, you know, that was a magical season, an incredible team. And he contributed so much to it. I think all of his teammates would say that. So, you know, he didn't harm anyone in what he did, which cannot be said for some other people who are in the hall. So I think I think it's a real shame, and it really contributed to the demons that really stuck with him for the rest of his life.
And now every friggin' baseball game has 18 ads every commercial break for a sports betting app. It's kind of ironic, you know, in some ways.
No, but, in many ways, they've ruined the game. I mean, they've taken the whole scoreboard, you know, and the outfield, and it's all, I mean, it's not what it used to be, where you could check on the other scores and keep track of who's pitching for the other teams. Now it's, do you want to bet on the next pitch? And it's just, you know, as a mother of a son who just turned 21, we've had a lot of really serious conversations about what they're pushing to those kids, you know, who are just legal for this. And, you know, they are targeting them. And I think it's outrageous.
Well, we'll definitely have to talk about that another time on a day that I guess there's another bigger story to get to. So why don't we get to that? But I would love to chat about with you in the future. No doubt about that. But what do you make of what happened today?
No, it was a huge day from a number of different angles. You know, we got the alert late morning that Iran was planning this action. And, I mean, quite frankly, Rich, they would have had to hire a skywriter to telegraph it more effectively. I mean, they apparently let the White House know. The White House let Barack Ravid, the reporter for Axios, know. I mean, Barack Ravid might as well be John Kirby's deputy at this point. I mean, it would be more honest, and he certainly works hard enough for them. So this was very well signaled, which I'm grateful for, because all my Israeli friends were able to get to shelters and there was no loss of life. The only person who died in this attack was a Palestinian because some shrapnel fell on him. So that, congratulations, Iran, great job. So that part of it is the good news. The bad news is this was an escalation from what they did in April. This was a more serious attack. There are credible reports that they used a hypersonic missile. We shot down, I think, 10 or 12 of the missiles using naval assets in, I believe, the Persian Gulf. And the Israeli most sophisticated missile defense system, Arrow 3, performed admirably and got the rest of the ballistic missiles. Now, the problem is it costs us $1 million to fire off those naval assets. It cost the Israelis $2 million for every interceptor for Arrow 3. So Iran was able to exact a cost from us for this. I'm glad at least we supported them. I'm glad it was successful. But the question now becomes, what comes next? Will we support Israel if they strike back?
Well, is this Iran's way of saving face for the events that occurred in Lebanon, and then they told us it was coming, and then it's over, and life goes on, or not?
Well, that again is the question for the Israelis, because that was the tack taken in April, mm-hmm. when the president said to Prime Minister Netanyahu, "Take the win. You know, we successfully defended from the attack, so we're just going to let it go." But what that did was say to the Iranians, hey, anytime you're upset, a country-to-country attack, which had been unprecedented before April 13th, 2024, that's okay. And so does Iran now think it's okay to do this, to fire, 180 missiles at Israel, necessitating massive U.S., assets in the region, a significant U.S. expenditure on this? Is this just okay? Do we just take it? Or do we support Israel if they decide, there's a oil refinery, for example, or a nuclear site that they think it might behoove them to strike back? Which is the better response?
And I've heard some senators say that the United States should proactively start attacking Iranian oil facilities or refineries or something like that. I mean, is that only going to escalate things more? Will that get them to tone it down? How does it work with them?
Well, there are gradations of this. And the one I've heard is Lindsey Graham coming out, asking for direct U.S. strikes on mm-hmm. on Iranian targets. I agree with Lindsey on very few things, and this is not one of them. So I would say in this case, direct U.S. response is certainly not called for. But okay. How we would support or respond to an Israeli response is very, very different. So you can have the president, and I'm very curious to see what Governor Waltz says tonight about this. I hope it's the first question they're asked in the vice presidential debate with Senator Vance. What do you do if you wake up tomorrow and Israel has bombed a oil refinery in Iran? Are you burning up the phones tonight trying to get them not to do it? Or do you say, you guys do what you need to do, we have your back? And I think that's very different from Senator Graham's call for direct U.S. involvement in a strike.
Yeah, and I'm with you. There are very few things I agree with Lindsey Graham on. So I'm glad to hear you. Yeah. So
he's a nice guy.
We'll leave it at that. As the former deputy national security advisor to President Trump, if J.D. Vance called you, and I wouldn't doubt if he did, on the way to the debate tonight and said, what's the best response that I should give on behalf of the campaign? What would you suggest?
All you need is Donald Trump's record. And Senator Vance has been the strongest, I think, defender just on policy points. Because mm-hmm. I work for a 501(c)(3), Rich. I don't dabble in politics ever.
Of course.
But what I do is point out policy differences. And so you can simply say, under President Trump, we did not have the surrender of Afghanistan. We did not have the invasion of Ukraine. And we did not have the largest terrorist attack on Israel in Israel's history. And we didn't have a wide open southern border. So, that's the answer right yeah. there. Those four things, we didn't have them under President Trump. We could have had all four of them. And we didn't have any of them. And you can say that's an accident. I heard our governor, Josh Shapiro, on Fox earlier this afternoon saying that, the absence of evidence isn't proof. I'm like, come on, Josh. You can't tell me all these things happened by accident and that they didn't happen under President Trump by accident. And he was calling for adults to be in the room. Well, you know what? I agree with you because they haven't been in the room for 3.5 years, and this is what we've gotten.
Yeah, and that's the other part, Dr. Coates, that concerns me is who are the adults in the room? Is it Biden? I mean, is he with it? I think we're all on days like today in particular, you start to worry about who's making the command decisions here. And you got to hope that there's reasonable minds at the Pentagon, because I don't think Biden's with it. I don't think it's a controversial statement to make right now. Obviously, the Democrats didn't think he was with it. That's why they got him out of the race. So it's very alarming that you have the commander in chief with such mental capacity at this moment in time.
No, it is, because he retains all his constitutional powers.
Right.
And, you know, say what you will of Kamala Harris, she's at least compos mentis. I mean, she can respond to you when you speak to her. So, you know, it's been bizarre to me that the Democrats are just fine letting things drift along like this with a president who's so obviously compromised, who spent the weekend, you know, at the beach. And today, now, you know, on Tuesday, is suddenly able to respond to a massive hurricane that's destroyed a big swath of our country. You know, and especially the people of North Carolina, our prayers go out for them, but they need more than prayers. They need people to show up with water, and yeah, they need the teams to go in to restore the electricity, and the president was sitting on the beach. So, you know, that's what really keeps me up at night is, you know, what if Netanyahu calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, because sometimes he does that, and says, I need to go after this site. I have a target of opportunity. Can you give me X to help me? Because I don't have X. And the president can't be reached. But what happens then?
Yeah, and just switching gears for a moment to China, because, you know, there's been so much has come out about Tim Walz and China. And I know that now Chairman Comer has launched a investigation mm-hmm. into this. I don't think people understand a lot here. We know that he lied about being in Tiananmen Square, but he spent a lot of time in China. And do you have any insight into what it is that Chairman Comer is looking into vis-a-vis Walz and China?
I believe it is the Chinese education operation. And, you know, my husband and I actually took our kids out of Germantown Academy because they had a Confucius Institute. And this since the boy is 21 and the girl is older, this was a while ago. But we were deeply concerned by the way the educational ties between the United States and China, which you would think are a good thing, a positive way to interact with this culture, you know, were being exploited to sell to our kids a very positive image of China and a very welcoming image. And then there was always travel to China that was involved in this, and that you would go junior year. Absolutely not. But Governor Walz was firmly in favor of this. And, you know, all of these trips he took were with students. They were with, you know, people from Minnesota whose kids now all their DNA is being held by the PRC. And he took his honeymoon there. And so he is so clearly compromised. And I haven't heard him say a single strong thing on China. And I think that is the national security question. I mean, if I had my way, if I was conducting the debate, the first question tonight would be on Iran, and the second would be, okay, this is actually relatively small ball because Iran is a wholly owned subsidiary of China at this point. So how are you going to deal with the big monster? And I would be really curious to hear his answer on that because he is so compromised.
Yeah, and you know, since you brought up Shapiro, Dr. Victoria Coates, and I was watching the captions when he started defending Kamala Harris's position on fracking, mm-hmm. and again, I took a sigh of relief that he's not her running mate. But it seems to me like in addition to dropping pallets of cash off at Iran's door, our energy policies have also emboldened Iran and China, and will Walz be asked about that tonight? Because he's another one of these, you know, green EV and fossil fuel wackos, and so I hope they hold him to account for that tonight as well.
Oh, I mean, I hope so too. I don't have a lot of faith in this particular group of moderators, but what I'd like to ask Josh is, you know, you're so confident that she's changed her tune. You know, what about her actions over the last 4 years
yeah.
make you think she will not act the same way once she gets to become president? And she treated you, Shapiro, the way she did because you're Jewish, and she knew she couldn't sell a Jewish vice president to her nasty
yep.
anti-Semitic base. And, you know, why are you carrying her water at this point on a critical issue for all Americans, but particularly for Pennsylvanians, which is, are you going to continue to prevent us from taking serious actions? And, you know, last thing I'd say on that is for the Israelis, if they take out the major Iranian refining facility right on the Persian Gulf, that's 2 million barrels per day. that they would be taking off the market. 1.7 million of those barrels go to China at a discounted price. When we did it, when we tried to take the Iranians as close to zero as possible, we actually communicated with the Chinese and said, hey, what do you need? And we can sell you this stuff at market prices, and we're going to work with the Saudis. And guess what? Nobody remembers the great oil crisis of 2019 because it didn't happen. Because everybody played their part, and there was plenty to go on the market. But if you try to take 2 million barrels off right now with no support from a swing producer like Saudi Arabia or a major producer like the United States, yeah, that's going to be significant pain at the pump. So I'm very curious to hear how they might answer those questions, and I'd like to know how Shapiro would answer it.
I hope you'll come back and visit with us on Friday, even though you joined us today, because you're the best, and we love having you. And there's just simply no one better on days like today, and most days in general. But follow Dr. Coates on X at Victoria Coates, and again, her book, which is called "Battle of the Jewish State," "Battle of the Jewish State," which features a foreword from Senator Ted Cruz. It is now available for pre-order on Amazon. So do that today. Okay.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, it's not? I just assumed it was.
No, it's going live on October 7th, I think.
Oh, okay. So I just you know what? I'm going to check as soon as I get off. They always have those pre-order things. But, you know.
Well, no, they do. But that was the whole thing, is we're going to do it on October 7th,
oh, gotcha,
on the anniversary.
The pre-order will be available.
I don't mind you mentioning it at all.
I'm going to mention it a lot. All right, my friend, it's the least I can do. I'm going to mention it so many times, you're going to be sick of me mentioning it. How do you like that?
I don't think you could say that to an author. It's not true.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Coates. We'll talk again soon, I hope. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Take care.
Go
the Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. I got to mention my friends at Emmons Roofing and Siding, because you know what? Here's the deal. Winter's coming. You know this. And how's your home looking? How's your home doing? It matters, right? Protection, peace of mind are paramount with your home. And your home, when you choose Emmons Roofing and Siding, is not only going to look stunning from the curb, but will also be energy efficient, secure, and ready to withstand the elements. And the elements are coming. That's why we stand with Emmons Roofing and Siding, and they've done so much great work for my home over the years. There's simply no better company than Emmons. They're trustworthy. They're honest. Matt and Stephanie, the owners, care. They know how important you are to me, and they're going to do a great job for you. They just did a kitchen door for us recently. Beautiful job on that door. And right now, they're offering each and every one of my listeners a 10% inflation relief discount. That's right, 10% off roofing, siding, Anderson windows, doors, and so much more. With winter coming, now's the perfect time to get that roof inspected. And if you have a house down the Jersey Shore, call Emmons. Emmons will take a free inspection for you before the winter weather comes. Very simple to reach out to them. Just go to emmonsroofing.com or call them at 856-885-6677. Upgrade your home with confidence with the company that we've trusted in our home for so many years. And enjoy that 10% inflation relief discount. These home repairs, they can't wait. So take advantage of the 10% off and go with the trusted name, emmonsroofing.com. EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Yeah, you know what, DeSantis? I'm looking at that New York Times article. Oh, man, it's so bad. We watched Tim Walz's old debates. Here's what we learned. He may not be a lofty orator, but he has shown an ability to deliver punchy critiques with every man appeal. Like, that just made me throw up in my mouth.
I thought this was actually the most damning line of the entire article. It says, Mr. Walz and his allies have tried to set expectations high for Mr. Vance, emphasizing his law school credentials. Mr. Vance is a practiced verbal pugilist who seemed to delight in combative exchanges on cable news and Sunday morning shows. I mean, that line alone shows you that the New York Times doesn't expect him to win, which is telling considering they just endorsed Kamala Harris earlier this week.
Right, right. And this is, this part of it is also makes me want to threw up in my mouth again. But a review of a half dozen recorded debates over Mr. Walz's career makes clear that while the camo wearing car-tinkering man from Mankato may not be his party's most stirring speaker. He is, in fact, a seasoned debater himself, living in a van down by the river. Well, I added that last part, but first of all, if your job is to watch Tim Walz debates, half dozen of them, if that was my job, you know what I would do? I'd walk out of the New York Times building, and I would stand in the middle of 8th Avenue and hope that a cab hits me hard. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I would do. That's if that's what my job was. That's what I would do. Boom. Dave Huber wants to know if that article was a bunch of baloney, Matt. But get it? Baloney?
Thank you. I do baloney. Love baloney. That is well documented. Did you see the other part of the article where apparently he doesn't do well under high stress situations during debates? He got into, I guess, a verbal argument with Dr. Scott Jensen, who was the Republican gubernatorial candidate in 2022. I guess Jensen had criticized Walz's reluctance to deploy the National Guard during the George Floyd riots. And he started screaming at him that he had served in the National Guard and that he didn't just sit around watching Top Gun Maverick like Jensen apparently did.
What a tool bag.
So apparently he can be rattled on stage, which might make tonight really, really fun to watch.
Listen, I didn't just watch Top Gun Maverick's big belly hanging out. I was actually in the National Guard. I mean, I didn't fly planes, but I didn't just sit there and watch G.I. Joe. What a dork.
I'm pumped. I can't wait.
Americans are more reliant than ever on government aid. That's from the Wall Street Journal. I was going to get into that, but I got to play this. I got to play this clip for you. This is with the middle of this dock worker strike going on, 45,000 of them. You would think the Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo would be very focused, dialed in on this. Yeah, not so much. Cut four.
Where have you been kind of focused and hearing on what would happen if the strike goes, let's say, longer than a week?
Again, I have not been very focused on that.
Ah, that's fine. Why would you be? Don't worry about it. It's all good. You're only the Secretary of Commerce. Why? And this could infect, you know, what's the word for it? Commerce. So why would you be focused on it? That's crazy to think that you'd be focused on that. Stupid. Duh.
$4.5 billion worth of commerce per day is the estimation.
Yeah, $4.5 billion. What's the word for it? Starts with a C. Rhymes with commerce. Commerce. Right. Could be impacted, and you're the Secretary of Commerce. Right. So maybe. And again, I don't want to tell you how to do your job as the Secretary of Commerce. You should be a little bit more dialed into how this could affect, I don't know, commerce? Just saying?
What does she do? Remember at the convention she was asked about the downward revision in jobs numbers?
Yeah.
And she said she wasn't familiar with the statistics and that Donald Trump made them up, but they came from her department.
Yeah.
She must not do anything on a daily basis.
I think she just shops on Amazon all day. Wait till she finds out none of the crap that she orders is going to get delivered because there's a work. That's what's going to happen in like a week. She'll be like, where are all those Amazon packages? They're like, well, Madam Secretary, there's a dock worker strike. We can't get anything delivered. She'd be like, there is? Well, now I'm really going to think about thinking about this. But in the meantime, hang on, because they're doing a flash Prime Day sale. Runs back to her office. Oh, man, this is bad. Bad. And, you know, this is good, too, because Joe Kernan from CNBC's Squawk Box torched her. And I'm glad because Gina Raimondo she deserves this. Cut 13.
By the way, he was president. We know what that resulted in.
Seems like you kind of forgot that earlier. Yeah, and the tariffs that he did put on were continued by the Biden administration. There was no recession. Real wages were actually up. Stock market did well. A lot of very positive things happened. Record low unemployment until the pandemic. So it's just weird to act like it's a complete wild card, what kind of president he would be when you had You've got a blueprint right there of what kind of president he would be. And Kamala Harris has been vice president for 4 years, and we've seen exactly what kind of vice president she would be.
Right. What have you seen? You've seen more manufacturing in this country since any time since World War II.
I've seen real wages go down. I've seen, you know, crime.
That's not true.
What's not true?
I just don't agree with that.
Real weekly wages have gone down. Average weekly wages are still down from when Biden came into office.
When Biden came into office, we saw sky high unemployment.
From the pandemic.
From the pandemic. She's like, well, I just don't believe it's true. Okay? I don't believe it's true. So the convicted criminal migrant deportations have decreased 74% under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, according to damning new figures that were just released. And she doesn't believe that's true either, even though they're damn. She doesn't believe that the job numbers were revised, even though the job numbers were revised by her own Department of Commerce. Like, did you know that the job numbers were revised 3 times? I don't believe that. Your freaking department did it. Literally the people that work in your building, they're the ones who revise the numbers. Yeah? I don't believe it. And, you know, sugar and glue may stick to you, but not to me. Like, what? What are you even saying right now? Nana, nana, boo, boo. I don't believe it's true. You're the Secretary of Commerce. It's Commerce revised the job numbers. Wait, go down the... What floor are you on? 11? Go to 10. Ask them. Ask anybody. Ask somebody in the building, and they'll tell you. They did it. Yeah. Still don't believe it. I guess if you just go with that, that's the whole thing. You know what I mean? It kind of goes with the whole Eddie Murphy, like, wasn't me. You know what I mean? Wasn't me. I saw you with her, and I saw... That wasn't me. Well, maybe it wasn't you then. All right. Let's put a little doubt there, you know what I mean? Yeah, she blamed Trump for making up the numbers, and then she literally made up the numbers. But she's great at her job, huh? So, you know, there's this huge internet... Like, the international longshoremen are going to start 45,000, shut down every port from Maine all the way down to the Gulf Coast, have huge impacts on commerce, and may cause goods, the prices of goods, to spike up and have major ramifications for commerce. What are your thoughts on it? She's like, you know, I'm not really dialed in on this right now, to be honest with you. It's Tuesday. I'm trying to ease into the week, you know? That's like a Thursday. That's like a Wednesday, Thursday conversation to have, all right? It's Tuesday, and it's sunny out. sunshine day, and she just breaks out in a song. Oh, my God. It's the most incompetent administration ever, ever, ever. In fact, here's a flashback of Biden National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. The Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in 2 decades. Oh, that's amazing. I had no idea. It seems very quiet on a day like today. Crickets. Crickets out of the Middle East. You can literally hear a dolphin break wind in the Gulf, whatever that is down there. Whatever that big thing is. What do you call that? The Gulf? Cut two.
And what we said is we want to depressurize, de-escalate, and ultimately integrate the Middle East region. The war in Yemen is in its 19-month of truce. For now, the Iranian attacks against U.S. forces have stopped. Our presence in Iraq is stable. I emphasize for now because all of that can change. And the Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in 2 decades.
I am telling you, crickets, I have not heard a word. I thought they were all in a library, Matt DeSantis, in the Middle East. That's what I just assumed. I thought they were all in a library. It was like, shh. Like the ghost from Ghostbusters came out. And went, shh. Like, shh, sorry. I haven't heard a peep out of you in the Middle East. Yo, Middle East, are you there? Ah, we don't hear anything. You have the Raimondo numbers clip. So this is after her own Commerce Department revised the job numbers and said all those numbers were fake, and they revised them, and they asked her about this. I think this was at the DNC. Was it right? It was a DNC.
Yeah, this was at the convention. I think she's being interviewed by ABC.
Yeah, and this is what the Commerce Secretary said about the Commerce Department revising the job numbers. Take a listen.
When you hear that, do you potentially think that this new numbers could be a liability for this campaign?
No. When I hear that, first of all, I don't believe it because I've never heard Donald Trump say anything truthful.
It is, though, from the Bureau of Labor.
I'm not familiar with that.
Just because you say it is, you know, you're rubber, I'm glue. Everything you say bounces off of you and sticks to me, bounces off me, and sticks. I think you don't even know that, do you? You don't even know that saying. I just don't believe it. Oh, you just don't believe it? Nah. Well, then, okay. I guess we'll move on to the next subject then, shall we? All right, I got a big fourth and final hour coming up for you. The latest on Israel, the latest on the dock worker strike, ballots in Arizona, Philadelphia. Got a lot to get to, actually, so stick with us. But I want to thank my friends at Cherry Hill Volvo for their incredible sponsorship. Cherry Hill Volvo. They are our studio sponsor, right on Route 70 in Cherry Hill. My great friends over there, and with an incredible offer for you. How about leasing the S60, a 36-month lease for only $369 a month? That's right, $369 a month on a beautiful car made in America at their plant in South Carolina. And you will love the treatment at Cherry Hill Volvo because Judith Krupnik and the entire team there take great care of you. That's why so many other customers become customers for life, myself included. Now, we drive the XC90. That's the Zioli family car with that third row. But whether you want to drive the XC40, XC60, certified pre-owned, or lease a car like the S60 for 36 months for only $369 a month, you will be in great hands with the team at Cherry Hill Volvo. And you'll love the luxurious experience. And you're going to love driving a Volvo because they're fast cars, they're safe cars, and you'll be supporting our studio sponsor because we broadcast live from the Cherry Hill Volvo studios. And that matters in this day and age of cancel culture that Judith Krupnik stepped up and said, I want the studio naming rights. So go see them today. They're the region's most accessible Volvo dealership, minutes over the bridge in Cherry Hill. Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.